Welcome to the Board Game Point of View. We are a group dedicated to the betterment of all people under the banner of tabletop gaming and also a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. My name is Adam. I'm your moderator. And tonight I'm joined by Steven,
now known as DJ Jazzy Jeff,
and Seth,
the Wandering Man.
That's right. We are on location. We're actually not in our headquarters.
Well, we are not on location.
Well, two of us are.
Well, okay. Well, then don't say we.
Okay. Two of us are actually in the new headquarters.
Steven and I are coming to you live from a blanket fort I built in my garage.
Heck to the yeah.
Because our current headquarters is actually being utilized by someone else. So we had to get a little resourceful.
I gotta say, I like this, though.
It is nice.
I think it might be the new headquarters.
It is. It is cozy.
How's the sound in there? Does it echo too much, do you think, or nah?
No, it works perfectly.
Nice.
I've got a blanket draped from my shelving over to my sport utility vehicle. And then we've got, like, I don't know, what are these?
I don't know what they are either.
Tokyo lantern lights hanging from inside.
Inside the blanket
fort.
Whoa. Right.
Whoa.
Yeah. And we're sitting on the back seat of my van, which I took out of the van.
Yeah, the minivan seat.
Yeah.
And then we have, what is this? This is like a...
This is my work bench. It's collapsible.
Dude.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's pretty sick.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're just... Totally a legit podcast, getting it done in the blanket fort.
It's the best way to do it.
Yeah.
Pretty soon every podcast is going to have a studio just like this one.
I agree.
I want to be in a studio like that.
What is your studio looking like there in Bozeman?
I'm just in front of a computer, but I have two monitors, so that's pretty sweet.
Dude, that is pretty swanky.
Also, yeah. If I wanted, I could retreat under cover of my own semi-blanket fort, which is really just a bed loft with a couple towels draped from it to block the light of the monitors. So I could go in there if I want.
Okay.
That's pretty awesome.
Nice. Yeah, you should.
Okay, I'll do it for just a second.
Dude, this is riveting stuff right here.
I know, yeah.
Yep, okay.
Those listening, if you are able to build a blanket fort...
Please do so now.
And listen to it.
Yes.
While in the blanket fort.
Yes.
I'm going to turn on a lamp under here.
That's a requirement for any time you listen to any of our episodes.
That's right.
From here on out.
Our episode should always be listened to and enjoyed inside a blanket fort. So, I don't know. Do we want to give a quick rundown as to what we're all about?
Dude, let's make him work for it.
Okay, you know? All right.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah, this is an ongoing podcast.
Okay,
you might
yeah.
have joined right in the middle, but you'll catch on soon enough.
Yeah, there's no looking back, man.
All right.
Forge ahead. As long as it involves listening to this podcast.
That's right, yeah.
You're on the right track. Uh-huh.
So, yeah, if you've been listening since our first episode, thank you very much.
We love you.
Yeah.
We love you so much.
You are literally the best.
You
are literally our entire fan base.
That's right, yeah.
Also true.
Pretty much. You are the reason we kept this thing going, so thanks. And a special thanks to Tom and Eric at the Dice Tower Network. We certainly appreciate being on the network, and we will try to do you proud.
I'm into that.
Yeah. What we like to do here on the Board Game Point of View to kick it off is... Talk about life. What's happening in our lives right
not
now?
Not the game of life.
We already did that.
Yeah, we have done that.
Refer to episode 14.
14.
Yeah.
Yep.
Nice.
It was a good one. Very informative.
It's very informative.
Yeah, that's what I heard people say about it.
Word on the street is
it's
a very informative episode.
Right.
I was not on that episode, though. So, really, why would you listen to it on second
okay.
thought?
So, we're just going to stop that right
because
here.
Because it's very informative. You were informed. The knowledge was imparted.
Uh-huh. Yeah, life, though.
Yeah. Seth, you're back at school.
I am.
You have been there for a few weeks now. How's that going?
Yeah, almost
sophomore
a month.
Sophomore year.
Mm-hmm. It's going well.
Yeah.
Enjoying my classes for the most part. I obviously nice. Could just go on about things, but yeah, things are going well.
Have you hit up Rooks yet there in Bozeman?
I've been one time.
Okay.
I want to go more. I haven't started up the weekly board gaming yet because, I don't know, I'm just kind of getting settled in again. But that right. should start reasonably soon.
Yeah. For those that don't know, Rooks is one of the best board game shops in the state, and it happens to be in Bozeman. Seth is attending MSU there, and you're not too far.
Nah.
Yeah.
Like a 5-minute walk.
I'm jelly.
Yeah.
Should be.
So jelly right now.
Yeah.
Jelly Jazzy Jeff. Sorry.
Nice.
So speaking of highlights, Seth, have you renewed your subscription to highlights?
That took me a second. Dude, those kid magazines?
We all know you're an avid reader of highlights. Okay?
I am.
Your father's a doctor, and I think that's the only time I've ever encountered
right?
those
that's
magazines.
That's what I was going to say. Every time I've gone into any sort of office,
right?
There's always been the highlight magazines.
But actually, it's usually the highlight of the appointment, too.
Nope. It's free candy. Definitely. Free lollipop.
Free candy.
Yeah. You never get free lollipops?
No, I don't see a pediatrician anymore.
Oh,
wow.
That hurts.
Dude. the very rare and elusive Adam burn is coming down.
Although, it is sad that you don't get candy because, yeah. Even
he's secretly, he's just bitter. He's jealous.
I mean, that is true.
Speaking of literal highlights, though. I did go up to Highlight Canyon a couple weeks ago.
Dude. Hiking, nice.
So that was pretty cool. So there is the highlight.
Right?
Awesome.
Yeah, there's some seriously good hiking in Bozeman.
Oh, yeah.
Tons. So for those that haven't been to Montana and are outdoorsmen, Bozeman is kind of a mecca for almost every outdoor sport.
Yeah.
So I actually... last Sunday, played soccer for the first time,
whoa.
A full game. Yeah, first time in about 16 years.
Nice.
So I was telling some of the kids in our youth group who play soccer that I was going to do this, and some of them weren't even born the last time I played soccer, which is a little bit sad, but you know, I held my own. I
believe it.
I gave it my all for about a quarter, just ran out of steam. But I hung in there.
But then you rested up and then came back the fourth quarter and just totally scored like 7 goals, right?
No. We didn't have any substitutes, so I just had to stay on the field. It was pretty rough. But
well, by resting up, I mean you just kind of walk around and don't actually go after the ball and whatever. That's what
right.
I
mean, you kind of attempt if it comes near you and then... kind of go back to a walking pace. Yeah,
exactly.
Right.
What position did you play?
I played midfield, so...
Oh, so you were in the perfect position
I got
position
to do a lot
that.
Of running, yeah.
Also the perfect position to both do a lot of running and then to not do any running and be like, oh, forward's got it. Oh,
that's
defense
right.
got it.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I liked it.
Nice.
So I didn't score any goals, but I had 3 assists, so that was pretty good.
Dang. That is good.
Did you get carded?
No.
Lame.
We didn't have a referee, so it was street rules.
Dude, nice. That's even better.
Yeah. So yeah, life going well.
Steven?
Life is going well for me. Yeah, got the rock on the new job still. That's going well.
Nice.
Shout out to all my awesome coworkers. You know who you are. None of you listen, but wait, you will one
yeah,
day.
Yeah, they will, and they'll remember that.
No, but I finally, after like a year of it being out, upgraded to next gen consoles, and
which are now current gen.
Which are now current gen, of course. Yeah, but last week I pre-ordered the Destiny. The Taken King limited edition PlayStation 4. It's the one that's super pretty. It's beautiful. Comes with all the Destiny, you know, expansions and all that with the game and yada, yada, yada. And So that arrived on Tuesday, day of release, and I've been kind of playing that the last couple days. It's pretty sweet, pretty awesome. I'm looking forward to getting some of those PlayStation exclusives that I couldn't get before, you know? Mm-hmm. Like The Last of Us, Uncharted, Until Dawn.
Nice.
Sounds good.
Awesome.
Yeah, it does sound good.
Yeah.
But this is a board game podcast, though.
Right, yeah.
So
let's talk about some board games.
Should we go bum 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 bum?
That's copyrighted.
No, it's not. I'm singing it. And also I changed the pitch of the note by 12 hertz each. Okay. Not by design, I just am off tune.
Wow.
So on that note, Seth, do you want to give us an X-Wing update?
Have you guys heard all the news and seen all the stuff?
Dude, I have heard some of the news.
Yeah.
I probably not as much as you have heard them.
Right.
Probably not. I haven't even played X-Wing for like a long time, but I'm still in the know. And this is partially the reason why I'm not playing X-Wing, because I can't afford to get all this new stuff that's coming out that's super awesome.
Okay.
So they released a new starter set, right, that has two new ships, well, three total, but two different ships, that has the First Order TIE Fighter and the T-70 X-Wing, I want to say. So it's like the upgraded model of both of those ships that's going to be in the new Star Wars Force Awakens movie. And they're actually different ships, which means they have different actions, they have different stat lines, different pilots, and different even upgrades. So like the new X-Wing actually has the boost action built into it, which is kind of crazy. And new TIE Fighter has a shield, and it can take an upgrade, which is like a system link, which allows it to do some cool stuff. And so, yeah, pretty crazy that starter pack has already been released before the movie's even out.
Yeah, I thought, last I had heard, I thought it was going to be released around the time of the movie, but it came out a little bit early.
Yeah.
It's funny, I haven't actually gotten the starter set this whole time. I've just utilized the starter set of whoever I was playing with. But now it's almost like, kind of like with the PlayStation 4, you know, you wait until something really cool comes out.
Right.
And so I'm thinking I might get this this new starter set.
Nice.
So I can finally.
That's probably a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got a new damage deck, which is going to be the legal damage deck that you have to use for tournaments and stuff starting next year. So that's one reason that you'll need to get it if you want to keep playing.
That I don't actually like.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Like, if you already have a starter set, getting a whole nother one,
well,
it seems...
The thing is, like, if you want to play in tournaments, then it's like, yeah, you're going to have to invest in this kind of stuff. But for anyone else, the other damage deck will still be fine. But it's got... The new one has just new damage critical hit cards, you know? So that's kind of cool that there are new effects that can happen.
I feel like they should still just have the damage deck for sale separately.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Like,
but then,
on the website?
Yeah.
But then they wouldn't,
that would be ideal.
They wouldn't sell as many core sets.
Right?
No, I know. Like, that's their whole point, is they're strong-arming you into buying another core set for, like, $40. But
yeah.
Yeah. Well, I just know that the latest wave was released.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And I had pre-ordered the two scum ships, so I got those in the mail.
Nice.
The Houndstooth and the, I can never pronounce it correctly. Is that the Kuraz?
Yeah.
Or something?
Like Craxes, Kuraz, I don't really know.
So I got both of those. They're pretty sweet. The Houndstooth.
Yeah.
Adam and I sat in a coffee shop just looking at the Houndstooth for like 20 minutes. And it's
not even a lie.
It's such a strange ship, and we were both just kind of in awe of it for whatever reason. But
right. Well, we were trying to figure out... it's a static ship, but obviously there are parts on this that, if it were real, would actually move. And we were trying to figure out how it actually functioned.
Dude, it's a
spaceship. It is a really interesting ship.
It just,
I know.
It does. It doesn't matter what's on it. It just goes.
Well, apparently. But it got to the point that while we were examining the model, we then also pulled up these schematics on Wikipedia and we're like doing intense research into into the Houndstooth. But
wow, nice.
Yeah, it's gonna be nice to see that K-wing in the film.
Oh yeah,
in December.
I'm looking forward to it. You know, maybe episode 9, we'll see it.
Oh my gosh.
So here on the Board Game Point of View, we like to do a few different segments, and they're all really entertaining. But every now and then, we like to do something a little bit different. And if you've listened to other board game podcasts, they often cover the Kickstarter craze. However, most of them cover the really cool, high-profile games. So what we want to do is take a look at Kickstarter, but we're going to look at games that are a little bit different and probably fly under the radar of most people. So
yeah, it's Kickstarter from a different point of view.
Right.
Which is what we're all about.
Nice.
That's right. So Steven has found one. I'm going to let him kind of describe.
Dude, if I even can, right. Man. This is a real slobber knocker. Yeah, so Adam tasked me. Well, I mean, we kind of came up with our own stuff, but Adam tasked me with finding a Kickstarter game that was a little bit more unique, a little bit stranger, kind of, as he said, like, under the radar. Mm-hmm. One you wouldn't really see if you just casually went to Kickstarter, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I did some digging, and I found a game entitled And Then We Held Hands.
Just let that sink in.
Just, yeah. I mean, think about that. Think about how beautiful that is.
I thought it was a World War II game.
That he legitimately did.
Yeah.
It is far from it, though. This game, in a nutshell, is a cooperative strategic game, but it's nonverbal. So there's, like, no communication regarding the game. I'm sure you could, like, speak to one another, but no, like, distressing tactics or anything. And it is basically you and your partner, while playing off of certain cards you draw, are attempting to solve problems and reach the inner circle of this board. And the board has three circles. Each one gets smaller, you know, as it goes in. And it's like relationship building stuff.
Right.
So it's all like you have to keep in balance because you don't want to be too happy.
Right.
But you also don't want to be sad.
Right.
You want to be a very balanced person.
Yeah.
You can be realistic. You know, have a good viewpoint on things,
mm-hmm.
See the flaws, but deal with the flaws.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
And so you draw cards, and your partner does not see these cards, but you draw cards that say things like happy,
mm-hmm.
Angry.
Sad. Right. Sad.
I think sad is one, and then the other one is calm.
Yes.
Yeah.
You and your partner are trying to work to solve these problems and get to the center of the board so then you can hold hands.
Right.
And fix what is broken. That's the subtitle. Mm-hmm. But you have to do this without talking to one another. So
right.
It's all like observing what the other person is doing, where their piece is on the board, what cards you guys have. And you have to be very like detail-oriented when playing this game. It's
yeah.
super strategic, actually. And so it's kind of a strange theme. You know,
it is,
this
yeah.
whole like relationship, we have to overcome our problems. And yet, in a weird way, I feel like it would be kind of fun,
mm-hmm.
like to figure out at least once.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'd play this once, I think.
Just
yeah.
once.
Yeah.
Well, see, because then you'd fix all your problems. And
right. That's right. I'm happy now.
Yeah. Unless you failed, then you'd have to just keep playing.
That or just
never be in a relationship
yeah.
again.
Yeah.
That is an option.
No, it's an interesting looking board because, yeah, like Steven said, it's really, it's very abstract. So
super abstract. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just three concentric circles on this board with a heart in the middle, which is kind of your final destination. And then just these little colored dots all around the circle. So black is, I think, angry
sorrow,
or something.
Sad.
No, black is sorrow.
Sad.
Yeah.
Well, it's sad. I'm pretty sure the classification, though, is sorrow.
No, it's sad.
Okay.
Looking at it right now.
Okay. well, you're cheating. and then red, I think, is angry or anger.
Right.
Blue is
calm.
Yes.
And happy is green.
Yeah. If you put this board in front of me and didn't explain what the game was about, I really would have no
yeah,
clue.
Yeah, you have no
yeah,
clue.
It's not
and even
at
when
all.
It, yeah, and even when it comes to the cards,
right.
The cards are super abstract as well. So you draw a card just as happy.
Right.
And you look at the board in front of you, you're like,
Well, you can see when you draw your card because you each have your own deck of cards that you're drawing from. that are going to affect your mood. So you pick up the card and it says calm, and you can see that it's blue. And you're supposed to then be able to move to the blue dot if you'd like. But the further you move away from kind of balance, I guess the harder it is to then engage that next ring.
Mm. Yeah.
Right. And we watched Rotto Runs Through. He is a very popular Kickstarter kind of run-through video series that you can check out on YouTube. But he ran through the game, and he was playing for about 15 minutes, and he never reached the second ring.
Yeah, he didn't even get into the second ring, right. But he has an extended playthrough.
Right.
I would hope he gets to the end of that one. But although one thing I'll say is that we watched probably at least 5 or 6 minutes of it.
Right.
We kind of skipped ahead at parts. And it was still unclear at parts how you play this game.
Right.
it's so abstract that it takes a while to understand.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of cool, again, though, in its own way. It's
right.
It's sort of neat.
I think it would be a fun exercise.
Yeah.
And the fact that you can't communicate, which seems a little counterintuitive to maintaining a relationship.
Well, I think that's the point of the game, isn't it? That you're trying to communicate, and that's you're trying to work through it and get into the middle.
Rotto also gave a rundown of that, by the way.
Yeah.
It's also on the Kickstarter page. Because he did a Final Thoughts video. He had several videos. There's a whole video series, too, and then we held hands.
Right.
And he was talking about how some people, you know, dispute the fact that, well, you would talk in a relationship.
Sure.
But how this game brings out these other... It's very complex, but...
Yeah. Yeah, he got really deep.
He did.
Yeah, and... we noticed, though, during the run-through, I think he was wearing a bathrobe.
I am also quite positive he was wearing a robe.
Right.
Yeah.
All I'm going to say is that you are your most creative when you're not bound by your material coverings. That's just what I'm going to say.
Okay.
I don't really want to know more than that.
Yeah.
You don't. You're right.
It's totally fine to just leave it there. This game... If you are at all intrigued by this concept, maybe say you and your partner are having problems, you know?
Right.
Apparently, this game actually, it reached its Kickstarter like quota.
Over $5,000.
Yeah, it received its funding. So it was originally a free print to play.
It probably still is.
It probably still is. Yeah. But and now there's going to be the official version with slightly better artwork. And by that, it's just... more abstract, I think.
Yeah.
But, if you can look into this game on Kickstarter if you want.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
As we're recording this, you have 12 days to get on there and fund it. So if you are interested, jump on soon, because like most Kickstarters, it's only available for a certain period of time.
Mm-hmm. Something interesting about this game that I noticed before we wrap it up is that it has music composed for it. It's just kind of like this melodic piano piece. I'm not really sure how that works into the game. It doesn't really say, but just some music that maybe you play it while you're playing to kind of add to the atmosphere, the artistic feel of it. And it's kind of neat.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool music. But
it's one of the rewards, I suppose you'd call it, you'd get for supporting the Kickstarter, actually, is the original soundtrack, is what it's called. But I'm pretty sure it's just this one piano track. Yeah,
I really like that idea, because I think you will be just sitting in silence for the most part.
Yeah, because if you're not supposed to talk, it might be a good idea to have a backing track. But
right.
So, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Seth, can you tell us who designed this game?
Yes.
Okay.
The award-winning debut game of Maltese game designers David Cheerkop and Yannick Massa, with the amazing art of Marie Cardois. I don't know if I pronounced that right, but there you go. And it's
I thought I saw a photo of the illustrator holding a box of Dixit, which is just a game that is all artwork. So if she has done some artwork for Dixit, I know most of that is pretty high quality.
Yeah, yep, you are correct. She is the artist who created it for Dixit. As well as Steam Park and Marrakech, if you're familiar with any of those.
Well, yeah, if you are a fan of either of those games, you might want to check this out just for the artwork.
Oh, hey, something I also just saw, that they not only have the digital print and play, but they have a Vassal version as well, which is interesting.
Nice.
Yeah.
So that's our first Kickstarter look.
The Kickstarter spotlight.
Right.
And now we hold hands, Adam.
Can I pretend like we're holding hands? Happened.
Wow, your hands are very warm.
Are they?
They are.
I'm sitting on them.
Oh, okay. Let's talk about Machi Koro. So this game has actually been out for a while. It's a Japanese published game. And it took a few years to get to the US and Germany. You have to actually publish the game in Germany to get nominated for the Spiel des Jahres. But this game was nominated along with Colt Express and The Game this year. And obviously, like we've talked about many times, Colt Express was the winner. But Machi Koro is a decent game in its own right. And if you haven't played it, it's, I suppose, very similar to the way you gather resources in Catan. You are going to be the mayor of your own little town, and you are going to be adding different buildings and different structures to your town. And each of these buildings and structures has a number associated with it. And each turn you roll a die or dice, and if your number comes up and you have a building with that number, then you get some money or another benefit. Steven and I actually played it head-to-head the other day, and you have gotten a chance to play it a few times after that. What do you think overall of Little Machi Koro?
I like it. It's another one of those games where, for me personally, I don't think I would agree with it being nominated for, like, Game of the Year.
Sure.
It just doesn't seem quite on that level. Now, with that said, it's not bad by any means. I'm not nearly as opposed to it as I was Camel Up.
Right.
but I guess it's something that you can maybe get into more, Adam. But depending on how many players you play with, the main drawback is that it can be very broken.
Right.
So as far as the game itself goes and the artwork and, like, just the real simplistic play style, it's really cool. It's really fun. My sister, we were walking through Barnes & Noble, and she saw it on the shelf, and she's not a hardcore gamer by any means, and she's just like, I want that game. She knew nothing about it. She didn't read about it. She saw the artwork, and it's like, that game looks cool.
Right.
And it does kind of have that effect. Like, everyone who sees it, even if it's a negative comment about the artwork, because it's not for everybody, but everybody takes note of it.
Right.
And that is very cool. And so my sister and I played it, and she really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I like it fine, but maybe you can explain the slightly broken side of it.
Right. Yeah, I think what people are discovering is that there are definitely, depending on the number of players, there are certain ways to play that will almost ensure you victory. It's a dice rolling game, so you're rolling dice to decide if you are going to receive money to purchase more buildings, and there are ways to corner a particular market, depending on what you're purchasing.
Well, so I haven't played the game, but I just want to say there are a limited number of cards that you can buy, right, of each variety.
And, right.
So if you tried to corner the market, like you said, couldn't other people then just buy them out as well, and then you all are on even terms as far as that goes?
Yeah, you certainly could, but at that point, then if you are copying your opponent, then that just doesn't seem like much fun to me.
Fair enough.
Then it's just a dice game where you are rolling a dice and each receiving probably the same things, so that would be, in my mind, a mirror match, which wouldn't be as much fun. There are certainly different avenues to win. So I think if you had played it a number of times and you see your opponent is going one direction, you could immediately go another direction and try and corner the market on another number
and
compete. Yeah. But again, then it's just the luck of the die as to which number is going to get rolled more.
Mm-hmm.
So, like Catan, it is similar in that you are kind of a slave to what's going to happen when you roll the dice.
Yeah, it really seems like the kind of thing where when they designed the game, there were several set ways that, as you said, make winning very easy.
Mm-hmm.
And then as like the fail-safe, they just have the dice.
Right.
So, because if the dice wasn't there and they had a different like mechanic, you could win just like in the blink of an eye, I think.
Right, yeah, it would then be whoever had the best strategy, which is how most Euro games work.
Yeah.
This is, like Catan, it is kind of a Euro-ish game, but it's got that luck element to it that I think sets it apart. And the reason it was nominated for Game of the Year is that it's very accessible. It's simple. The theme is something that everybody can get into. And I think that luck element really played a large part in its appeal. The art style, like Steven was saying, is it's cute. You know, you've got your little cheese factory, and you can see, you know, the cheese there, and you've got a wheat field and cafes and all these fun little buildings that you can put into your town. So I guess if you get kind of into the city building aspect of it, there's some fun to be had there, where you're really invested in kind of the theme of it.
Well, unless you get too invested, because if you think about it from terms of a real city, things can get out of hand quick.
Yeah.
Because, like, if you're using a certain strategy, say, and you have convenience stores, and you have, like, 7 convenience stores.
Right.
I mean, in big cities, there are a lot of stores, but that's still like, wow, you have a lot of stores, dude.
Yeah, especially when it's exclusively convenience stores.
Yeah.
Right.
And like I was playing with somebody who had 9 cafes.
Wow.
And you're just kind of like, wow, dude, you have right. like nothing else in your city. It's just all cafes.
Right.
But hey. You know.
Yeah. And there is kind of a player interaction element to where something like the cafe, if you roll the number and you have a cafe that has that number on it, you get to then steal coins and money from other players. So there is the interaction between players that you don't often see in Euro games. So maybe that was also part of the appeal, is that there is a little bit of battle between mayors.
It's battle, but still based on luck.
Right, yeah.
I mean, you can have all these super aggressive cards and then never roll them.
Yeah, that is true.
To activate them, and then they're useless.
Right.
So it's
and they're more expensive.
Yeah.
Right.
So, I don't know. It just depends. I played with a guy who was much more aggressive. I had a lot of cards that were like antagonistic to the other.
Yeah.
Seems like a strategy Seth would take.
Right.
Yes. It sounds like the best strategy to me.
But that's actually a problem, because then to counter it, another player, it was during my three person game.
Right.
Also got some of the attacking cards. So then they were just stealing from each other back and forth the whole game. So nobody could save money.
Yeah, the object of the game is to save enough money to buy these monuments, which are radio towers and train stations and amusement parks. And that's how you win the game. The first player to build 4 of these. But yeah, if you can't save up enough money to build these things, it just kind of becomes a game of attrition, which doesn't sound like much fun to me either.
It wasn't.
Yeah.
It wasn't as much fun.
Now, I will say, before we totally give up on this game, there are 2 expansions.
I was actually going to bring that up, too. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, there's the Harbor expansion. And this, I think, really actually fixes the game. Because at this point, you shuffle the core set into the harbor, and you have this giant stack then face down, and you draw 10 at random from the top of the deck, and that's what's available to you to buy. So you are, I guess, limited in what you can buy based on what you're drawing from this deck randomly, which I think adds another level of strategy, but also I think takes out some of that cornering the market aspect that makes it feel a little broken.
And a lot of other games that that are similar to this as far as like city building, like instantly when I saw this game, it reminded me of, say, Suburbia, right? Where you have the tiles that come out and you're buying these for your city. They have that where it's random. You don't get to choose what you want. So it's like your strategy is constantly changing based on what's coming up. And I think that, like you said, would really help the game and its diversity. And then maybe the die would kind of counteract the randomness of the cards, so that it's like really whatever happens, it just kind of, it's kind of luck and makes it more intense and fun. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I would like to play it with the Harbor expansion, or maybe we just take the core, like, base set and just shuffle it and play it that way from now on. But yeah, I was going to mention Suburbia too, because in terms of a city building game, the theme and just the fun of building your city in Suburbia is such a joy, and I didn't get that sense when playing Machi Koro. This was more, I need this card so that I can make money, because I know these numbers are going to be rolled more often, kind of thing. It wasn't as much about getting into the fun of building a city.
Do you think that's partially just because you already see all the possibilities laid out in front of you instead of kind of the things coming up and you're like, oh, I didn't know I needed that for my city?
Potentially. I think the other thing that Suburbia has going for it is that it's hex tiles, so they fit together really nicely and they synergize and they feed off of each other. So depending on where you're placing tiles in accordance with others, you're getting bonuses. So it's a more fun game to look at. It's a thinkier game, and I think we're going to review this one along with Castles of Mad King Ludwig at some point. But yeah, if you guys have not played either of these and are looking for a city building game, Suburbia is the way I would lean, just offhand. Yeah. And then the second expansion for Machi Koro is Millionaire's Row, which adds a handful of different buildings, but it also kind of adds a take that element to it, where you are putting other people's cards under renovation. So you're putting a token on top of their card, and if that number comes up, they don't get to utilize that particular card until they remove that token. So I don't know how that would make the gameplay.
Yeah, I'm either. I'm like,
it just sounds like more conflict, drawing it out a little bit longer, but I don't know. So I guess we can recommend Machi Koro, but certainly get the Harbor expansion play it that way. Because the base game, I really have no interest in playing anymore, just because there is kind of a set strategy that I like to use, and it...
sounds like a personal
battle. Generally, Well, that's how you win the game.
Yeah, it's true.
It's not all about winning, Adam.
So let's move on to our game of the podcast. We have no intro.
I was going to say, what do we do here?
I know.
Yeah. Alex, I know. I miss you.
Wait, has Alex abandoned us or what?
No. He, for those that don't know, we often have Alex Eating from the Plaid Hat podcast do these really cool intros to our game of the podcast. But he just got a role in a play. He got cast as Shrek
yes. in the play. That's amazing.
I know. It's so cool. So
that is like so...
It's perfect, isn't
it? Yeah, it's so fitting. It's so wow.
I want Congrats, I need Alex. To see him dressed up as Shrek.
Yeah, right. We need
like
a picture.
With like a bald, like the bald cap on and the ears. Oh, man.
I think we need to take another trip to Ohio is what needs to happen.
Yeah, and watch it live.
Yeah. But I don't want to bother him because he is in rehearsal for the next 2 months. So I may throw one at him. But typically we'd have a really cool intro to our game of the podcast. But the game is cool enough. It's going to stand on its own tonight.
Yes, I was about to punch the table.
I know.
With how this table is. I know. I don't know if I trust it.
You knock your root beer over.
Yeah.
But we're going to talk about Lords of Waterdeep.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. I was going to do the same thing, but I was like, nah.
Dude, you just got to go for it, man.
Right. So this is a game set in the Dungeons and Dragons universe.
Which is it's the Forgotten Realms universe. Dungeons and Dragons, of course, you know, has the whole multiverse thing going.
Right.
And then the Forgotten Realms is like their main primary one where the stories come from.
Right. So. And Waterdeep is one of the largest towns in that universe. And what you are doing are you're playing different lords that reside within this town, and you're all a little bit seedy. And what's happening is you are... sending out agents into the city because you have particular quests that need to be fulfilled, but you need people to go out and complete these. So you send agents out into the city to gather up rogues and fighters and wizard and money so that you can send these parties out into the wilds to complete these quests. And when they return with the spoils, you get a little bit of a cut. And as you do this, the more quests and the more success you have, your prestige grows within Waterdeep. And that is how you keep score and ultimately win the game, whoever ends up kind of with the most prestige at the end of the game. It is a worker placement game, and it is probably the most accessible worker placement game on the market today. Steven and I have gotten a chance to play it a few times. I've played it with the full complement of five, and again, he and I went head-to-head the other night, and we played it three-player, and it has stood up regardless of the number of players. So I guess let's look at the box real quick.
Dude,
I know. So
this is my role in the
game. I know.
I always have to bring out the artwork and the what would this be called?
This is the inlay.
Well, that's an inlay. I knew that.
Yeah. Sure, Steven.
Components. That's where I was.
The components. Yeah.
Components.
The box is actually probably one of the nicest game boxes I have ever seen.
And it is.
I know I say that about a lot of stuff, but legitimately, this
right.
box is super nice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wait, as far as like appearances go, or just like quality?
Everything.
It is. Yeah, it's funny. You look at the box when it is closed, and it's got the rectangular shape, but it's got kind of a funky. It looks like there's two lids to it, but one of the lids is actually the bottom.
Yeah,
it's kind of hard to explain, but it looks mm-hmm. very unique when
it has
it's on
this
the shelf.
Like, miniature ravine
right
that
right.
skirts along the edge of
right.
the box 360
right.
Yeah, the actual box though is very nice, like the mm-hmm. texture of the box and all that, the material it's made out of, the artwork is really cool. But you open the box and it is just the nicest, most convenient, OCD player friendly
right
inlay. Everything in the game has mm-hmm. its own little compartment. Like, it's even like divided between the factions.
Right.
The different game pieces. You have your money, you have your like your
right.
fighters and your clerics and all those components. You have your different cards mm-hmm. and all that in its own separate compartment. But it's just laid out in such a convenient pattern.
Right.
You just look at it and you're like, these wow.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you to the designers of this game for making
right.
this so convenient.
And what I really like is because it is so nicely laid out, you can turn this game upside down and on its side, and all the components still stay right where they are. Whoever designed
that,
the inlay, fantastic job.
Yeah, that is important.
Yeah, it's super, because that has happened with us so many times.
Yeah.
We you know, we transport our games to our various game nights and stuff,
right.
open the box, and it's just a disaster.
Right, and
this
Splendor
one,
chips just fall
oh, man,
all
Splendor.
Over the table. Yeah.
I love that game, but
yeah.
it's just, it has a knack for really, oh, man.
And you spend so much time, like, packing it up, right? And then for them to all just get jumbled again.
Right.
It's disheartening.
It's very much so. But not here. This is very solid. And when it comes to the game, though, I'm not going to lie. It was one of those that, despite how amazing the box was,
mm-hmm.
Just because of being a worker placement game,
mm-hmm.
and the couple that I had played before this, I just wasn't a huge fan of.
Right.
I wasn't super excited to play this game. I was a little hesitant, but then it finally happened. Because you kind of forced me to.
Right.
I'm like, what are we playing tonight, Adam? Waterdeep.
Right.
And then we got into it, and I really, really like this game.
Yeah.
It's probably one of my favorite games, honestly,
mm-hmm.
Which I did not expect. But it is just so well done, from the components to the artwork,
mm-hmm.
to the actual mechanics, to the setting and like the theme. You know, you're completing these quests, and all of the quest cards, like ones that are considered warfare.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have skullduggery.
Right.
And then you have
piety. Yeah.
And you have commerce.
Yeah.
And it's so cool because the titles and just the description of the quests fits with the classification.
Right.
Which seems kind of like a duh.
Right.
But a lot of games don't really...
They don't take the time to actually link those two together. Yeah.
But like in this game, you will have a piety quest that's like go in and heal these soldiers. And then if you complete the quest, it gives you... So it's piety because you're healing people, you're helping people.
And you're using clerics to do it.
And then since you're healing soldiers, the reward for the quest is soldiers, like the guys you healed.
Right.
So it all just fits together super well. Every card in this game not only has artwork that's very cool, but super neat flavor text.
Right.
And it's all about building, you know, Dungeons & Dragons, a role-playing game. It's a super well thought out, developed universe. And they brought that into this game as well, to where everything has descriptions.
Right.
And it just really builds this world to where when you're in Waterdeep, it may only seem like it's only a worker placement game, but it seems like so much more because of how well they designed everything.
Right.
I want to say, like you were talking about the theme of Dungeons & Dragons, and it seems really cool to me how the resources you are acquiring are actually like the adventurers. So it's like you're taking a step back from actually role-playing in like the Dungeons & Dragons campaign, and now you're the one sending the adventurers on the quests.
Right.
And so instead of just acquiring... You know, we can say like Agricola, right? Like you're acquiring the resources to build fences or whatever. You're actually acquiring adventurers and sending them on quests, which just seems super awesome.
Right.
It's really cool.
Yeah. It is a simple worker placement game, and people can understand, you know, the soldiers and the wizards and the clerics, they're just little wooden cubes and they're different colors, which I think is fun because you are basically sitting behind a desk sending these no-name people into the world to complete these quests. You don't really care what they look like. They're just little wooden cubes to you. So someone who's not into the D&D theme may just, okay, I'm going to need these specific color cubes to do these things. And someone who is into Dungeons & Dragons can read the flavor text and really get into the quests and really dive into the theme of it. So I think it struck a really nice balance there that makes it just really accessible.
Well, and even the factions, that's something that a lot of worker placement games don't have. You just choose a color. I'm going to play as yellow or green or whatever. In this game, you have five factions and each have a different color and a different like token and all of that. And all of them have their own artwork and kind of like faction sheets,
right?
If you will. I'm not entirely sure what you would call it, but it's where you keep all of your agents. It's in your tavern, and you can put like your completed quest cards stacked on that. You can keep your money on your little card and all that. And that also is just really cool because it's kind of a small element, but instead of just saying, I'm going to play as the black colored tokens or whatever, you can say, I want to play as the city guard, you know?
Right.
And then that also adds to the theme and like the cinematic side of it, because you can complete quests like breaking people out of jail, but you're the city guard, so wouldn't you be in control of the jail?
Right.
So then I was joking. that happened to me in one of our playthroughs. So then I had this whole funny side story about how I'm like one of the members of the city guard who uncovered this conspiracy within the city guard.
Nice.
So I'm like, I had this whole long story I came up with, but...
Right. Yeah, and like the red sashes and the silver stars, I think those are all legitimate parts of the D&D universe, as well
for sure.
The lords. These lords are actually characters that you'll find in the stories, and at the beginning of the game, you choose a lord basically at random. And at the end of the game, you'll get bonuses for completing specific quests that are catered to their particular role within the town of Waterdeep, which is just a lot of fun and something that a D&D player is going to just drink up.
Yeah, it adds to the strategy and everything. The three-player game we did, I won that one, but it was primarily because I just thought through, well, I sabotaged you.
That
was one thing I did.
Yeah.
But... see, the lord I got, I don't want to spoil abilities, but basically, I did like exclusively those kinds of quests.
Right.
And so then at the end, I got huge bonus points.
Right.
And then that helped enable me to grasp the victory.
Right. Yeah, and going back to you grasping the victory, there are things called intrigue cards, which I think take Lords of Waterdeep and kind of blend the Euro feel with the Amerithrash feel, where you get to actually interact with the other players and do kind of some nefarious things. So, for example, in this intrigue deck, there are what are called mandatory quests that you can actually give to other players, and they must complete the quests that you give them before they complete any of their own. And that's kind of what slowed me down early on in the game, because you gave me kind of two back-to-back.
Well, yeah, because that's, again, strategy. Because
right.
You can see, kind of, you can keep an eye on your opponents, mm-hmm. and you see what they're saving up for when it comes to their chosen quests.
Right.
Because, you want to choose a quest that will benefit, like, your lord and your whole strategy. And so if you have a quest that requires, say, 3 clerics, 2 rogues, and a warrior to mm-hmm. complete, well, then you give that player a mandatory quest that also requires, like, clerics and rogues.
Right.
So then he has to spend those agents on the mandatory quest.
Right.
Doesn't have the agents for the quest he needs to do, or, like, the one he wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it delays him by, like, a couple of turns.
Yeah.
So right. It's kind of diabolical, but that's what I did to you.
Right.
Because the first time we played, it was 1-on-1, and you destroyed me.
Right.
So I'm like, I need to watch out for Adam. So then this game, I kind of, like, yeah, took you out of the picture for a little bit.
Yeah.
And the mandatory quests, they're things like fighting off bandits and getting rid of, like, scum in the city and, like, riots and stuff, right? So it's not just like, oh, here's a quest that you have to do. It's like, these are things that we're going to stir up in your section of the city, and now you have to take care of it, which is pretty awesome.
Again, it all makes sense. Like,
yeah, it's super thematic.
Mr. Powell gave me a mandatory quest at one point. I'm playing as the city guard.
Right.
And the quest, was actually repel bandits, like, attacking the city.
Right.
And so when you think about that, the city guard repelling the bandits, it made perfect sense. So I joked with him. I'm like, I'm not even mad that you did it. It's kind of cool. But
yeah, the other thing is that the standard board, you open up the board and it's just this really awesome kind of map of Waterdeep. And you're placing your workers out on this map. So you'll go to one section of the city and you'll pick up a wizard or something. But you're very limited in kind of the actions available to you early on. So another fun thing is that you have the ability to gather money and then actually build additional establishments in the city. And then you own these establishments, which anybody can use, but then you get a little kickback if somebody uses it. And that's kind of early on in the game when I was getting those mandatory quests, I was not receiving a lot of prestige because I wasn't questing as much as you and Mr. Powell. So what I tried to focus on was building buildings, because you do get victory points for that as well.
Well, in the end, you got like 19 points or something for your buildings.
I built a lot of buildings.
So you ended up, I'm rocking the board at like 50 prestige.
Right.
Mr. Powell has about 33.
Mm-hmm.
And Adam's all the way back at like 12.
Right.
Like, he was so far behind. And then by the end of the game, though, it wraps around, I think I finished around 96 points.
Mm-hmm.
Adam was up at like 89.
Right.
Mr. Powell at 85. And we were all pretty close at the very end, despite that gap at the beginning, because of all those bonuses and things you end up getting. So,
if you do get kind of locked out of one direction, there are multiple directions to victory for sure.
Well, see, and I would just like to point out, if I hadn't delayed you, you probably would have beat me.
Most likely. So you played well.
So I played very smart. Yeah.
You did, yeah. So there is an expansion to this game.
Dude, of course.
That is, we don't have it, and I haven't actually played it yet, but it's supposed to be awesome. It is The Scoundrels of Skullport, and that actually comes with two different modules. Yeah. So again, these are actual places within the D&D universe. So the first module is the Dungeons of Under Mountain. And I guess the lore there is that some crazy wizard was doing experiments under this mountain, and so all of these monsters are just raging under this hill. So it's
like a party, right?
Right,
giant disco.
And you raise the roof.
That's right.
Raise
the mountain. So it's adding maybe more difficult quests that you have to complete, but the rewards are much greater. And then I think the second one is a little bit more popular because you can play with either or both, and that is Skullport. And what this does is it's going to allow you to place workers in this smaller section of a city, and the rewards are going to be just fantastic. So where in Waterdeep maybe you'll just get two rogues, in Skullport you might be getting two rogues, a warrior, and a cleric, but along with that, though, you'll also receive a corruption token. And at the end of the game, corruption tokens are worth negative points. So you can trade off for having something just awesome that may boost you ahead in a quest or kind of boost you along in the prestige track. But at the end of the game, it's going to come back to bite you a little bit.
Right. It would have to be, it's a very calculated risk, I'd imagine.
Right.
Because you could risk the negative points if it's like you're going towards one of the huge quests. Because
mm-hmm.
some quests, you complete it, it has crazy requirements, but it'll give you 20 to 30 prestige for
right.
one quest.
Yeah.
And those are the big ones. And if you did that, and you had to do like one visit to Skullport,
mm-hmm.
that's what it is, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Just checking. One visit to Skullport to get the requirements to like boost ahead at the very end and like overcome a player.
Right.
Then yeah, you might lose some, but mm-hmm. hopefully the quest gained you enough to make it worth it, I suppose.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that idea. I like when expansions take something that's already really good and just adds another level of complexity and gives experienced players another thing to think about.
Well, yeah, and it makes sense, too, because if one of these lords was in a tight spot,
mm-hmm.
go down to the slummy part of town or whatever,
right.
you strike
the
poor up
a of shadow.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right there. That's
yep.
that's sketchy. strike up a deal with like some gang leader or something,
right.
And then he's like, "Yeah, well, I'll help you, but you owe me."
Uh huh.
See, it all still makes
yeah.
sense, I think, because it's like I'll give you some of my men,
right.
But then you have to do this, and then that's like the negative later,
mm-hmm.
right? So like, yeah, I like how you're actually like then becoming kind of a corrupt lord of Waterdeep, like
right.
even more than I guess you could have been otherwise. But then, like, that penalizes how much control you actually have over the city.
Yeah. And the expansion also comes with new lords that you can play. And one of them actually gives you bonus points the more corruption you have, which
awesome.
Is pretty cool. And it also adds a sixth player.
So then it adds another faction, I assume?
Yeah, it adds the Gray Hands.
Huh.
Yeah.
Nice.
So, yeah, overall, awesome worker placement game, super accessible. If you are trying to get somebody into board gaming and you want to play something a little heavier, Lords of Waterdeep is perfect.
Yeah.
The only downside to the game is that if you're not really familiar with what it's about and you are an avid D&D player and you see this on the shelf, the cover of the game is very engaging. There's a warrior and like a rogue on the cover.
Right.
And maybe you would be expecting something else once mm-hmm. you open the box.
I will say, yeah, like it's really cool artwork on the front.
Mm-hmm.
But when I first saw it, I did not think it was a worker placement game.
Right.
I will admit. I thought like, dude, that's really cool. I wonder what that is.
Right.
Wait, it's a worker placement?
yeah. It's a Euro game.
But then when you get into it all, though, mm-hmm. it's super cool when you get into the theme and all
right.
that.
Yeah. So yeah, I think we can recommend this game for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely, as you said, a game where, you know, if you're used to Monopoly and Life and all of that,
mm-hmm.
this is one of those board games that really showcases how dynamic board games have become.
Right.
Like when it comes to the theme and just the art and
mm-hmm.
the mechanics and the box and just all
yeah.
that stuff. Is just on the next level, you know, and it
yeah.
would really be a great way to introduce them to the more serious, like,
yeah.
I'm just blabbering on, man.
No,
Water
yeah, I
deep.
Know what you
I know.
Mean.
Yeah.
Water deep, man.
Water
you gotta get it. It's so good.
Yeah, I think these games that are kind of like mixtures of two different genres really help people like new to either of them. Or
mm-hmm.
just the mechanics that are from different things kind of introduce that, and that really helps and makes it accessible.
Right.
Well, and I find myself in our Dungeons and Dragons, like, official in our campaign right now. I find myself very eager to get to Waterdeep now.
Right.
Now that I've, like, played this game, like, Waterdeep, that place, crap goes down in Waterdeep.
Right.
Those are some crazy lords.
Yeah. But. And if you play this and you want to play maybe a little bit heavier worker placement game, I would suggest going to Viticulture, Caverna, or maybe even Agricola, which is kind of the father of worker placement. But there certainly are heavier worker placement games out there. But this is a really nice kind of springboard into that particular mechanic.
And it also has an iPad app.
Really?
So, yeah, you can play it online, I believe. Or
awesome.
Probably just with people around you. Cool. On your device.
Wow.
Nice.
Kind of a cheap way to get into it.
Yeah.
See how it is.
Yeah. You know, that's actually really good advice, because if you don't want to spend, say, $60 on a board game, you could try the app and see if you enjoy the app.
Yeah, get the basic idea.
Right.
Of mechanics, it's, and everything. I think it's $7, so not too bad.
Yeah, that's a pretty inexpensive way to test the waters, but I always like to get the board games because I like to sit around the table with people. So, but, you know, if you're stuck somewhere for a while, it's always nice to have one of these kind of more in-depth apps than tic-tac-toe or whatever the kids are playing these days. I don't even know.
It's definitely not.
Okay.
Hey, you guys want to get this game and then play it with me, please?
We'll see. I'll get back to you on that.
Do we have anything else tonight before we wrap it up? Any final thoughts?
Hopefully I don't get swarmed by moths on my way home.
That's right. We do have a problem.
Me either.
I don't want to go in depth.
Right.
But Billings is getting overrun
with
moths.
Right.
They just cover your car, they cover your house.
Yeah.
It's quite the epidemic.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah.
That's about all I have.
Moths.
Moths, yeah.
Just moths.
I guess I'll say we are in the blanket fort, but we are currently constructing our new headquarters, which should be ready hopefully the end of December. And this place is going to be just fantastic.
There's so much hype.
I know.
So much hype.
There is. And at this point, I don't know. What do you guys want to see in our new headquarters? What do we need in there?
I don't know. You know, the headquarters, I'd have to have time to think, honestly. But what I really want to see as far as this company goes is the company van.
Right.
But we've been over that.
Right.
I have blueprints of the company van, and it's decades away probably of ever coming to fruition, but one day.
The company van. Yep. So we're going to need a garage in the new HQ then, is what you're telling me.
Hidden secret garage.
Right.
in the back alley.
Nice. Like an elevator that just takes it.
That,
yes.
That sucks it down,
right.
And then you just pop up in the back alley.
Yeah. Okay.
And then you just gun it.
We will have an alley, so that's perfect.
See?
Yeah.
I think that the elevator should also not only be just an elevator, but then it can just turn into a ramp as well. So if you need to get in or out super quickly,
okay,
then you can just do that.
Yeah.
I think that would be cool.
Or a spring-loaded elevator.
That sounds... What?
like an ejector sheet
although
for a car.
Speaking of springs, I feel like in the back of this van, we should have like a rack set up with just 5 or 6 pogo sticks.
Okay.
So in an emergency, roll out and we get out of the bus, kick the back door open with pogo sticks and just go hopping our way down the street.
Okay.
Throwing flyers for board game point of view.
I like it. Yeah. When we're running from the moths.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I always run from moths via pogo sticks.
That's right.
Moths aren't quick enough. They're not able to anticipate your bounces.
Right.
Yeah.
Serpentine. Serpentine.
Serpentine. on a pogo stick. He was kind of like bouncing back.
Yeah. Oh.
So.
Things have gone downhill, guys.
This has been episode 17 of the Board Game Point of View. Join us again for another podcast.
Dude, wait, what floor of the Dice Tower are we on?
Ooh, first floor.
First floor.
Actually, the basement.
That's a lobby.
We're in the basement.
Come in the basement right now.
Okay, I'll take the basement.
All right, awesome. It's where our van is anyway.
Dude, yeah.
Yeah.
We have to have the elevator up onto the street level, so we're in the basement.
Yeah.
Boom. Good night. Good night, ladies and gentlemen.
Good night.
Dude, wait. Okay, guys, the first image on that article I clicked, calling himself the Moth Reaper, David Correa uses a leaf blower to clean moths from an awning at Indian Nations Trading Post on North Broadway.
I believe it.
The Moth Reaper. That's I love Dude. It. That's Billings for you.
Yeah.
Nice.
You were kind of the Moth Reaper the other night, though.
Dude, I no
Stephen
joke.
Went at about 100 moths with a t-shirt.
Dude, I don't believe it. One time I had to defend Steven from moths.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. What? You remember that, Steven. Outside your own home.
I do remember that.
He couldn't even protect his own family from the moths.